Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to another edition of Continue Mission, and Merry Christmas to everyone. Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. You know what? I'm going to play one more song here, folks. I mean, everybody, I got a request for this Charlie Brown song again, so we're going to play it again, folks. Enjoy it. Well, there you go. There we were, the second time around with the Charlie Brown Christmas theme. And it's Christmas time. I hope everybody's having a wonderful Christmas. Obviously, we all are looking to shut the door on 2021. And that's right, folks. 2021 is just days away from being history. So think about it. A whole year has flown by. Here we are. It's Christmas time. And what are we going to talk about tonight? We're going to be here tonight to talk about Christmas. This show is dedicated to Christmas. You know, we have been given such a tremendous gift. Such a tremendous gift. The birth of Jesus Christ is why we celebrate Christmas, folks. That's exactly why we celebrate Christmas. As you can see, I even put it under the category Christianity tonight. And lots of people are listening in, and that's really good because I'm excited to talk about the real reason for Christmas and what we should be doing. Not just at Christmas time, but at all times. And that's demonstrating the pursuit of peace and love. And we've had some wild times on this radio show. A lot of wild times on this radio show. Tonight's not going to be one of those times. Tonight we're going to be dedicated to joy to the world, you know? I mean, think about that. What does that really mean, joy to the world? For the Lord has come. You know, there are a lot of people out there that struggle through life, and this time of the year is especially bad. And I can tell you about many Christmases where me as a young sergeant, even a young private, I spent time away from home, you know, different countries, different military bases. Sometimes I'd be pulling duty on Christmas Eve, and I would sit in there and I would think about, you know, how I would love to be home. But then I realized I could look right out my, right out my window or right out the door if I was walking a post. Pulling guard duty, I could look and I could see another soldier just like me. Away from home, away from family, doing what needed to be done. All of you that are not home for Christmas, all of you soldiers, sailors, airmen, Marines, members of the Coast Guard, police officers, all of you, you EMS workers and all of you medical workers and first responders that are on duty right now, Merry Christmas to you. And God bless you and thank you for standing a post on this night. But you know, Christmas is not about being in one place or another. Christmas isn't about gifts. Christmas is in your heart. So no matter where you're at, you can celebrate Christmas and what it really means deep your heart. And never be ashamed to say Merry Christmas. You know, I find it fascinating, actually. When I say Merry Christmas this year, so many people were so happy. They were just so eager to say Merry Christmas back. You know, even some of my friends that don't celebrate Christmas, you know, I got friends that are Jewish, and, you know, during Hanukkah, and I said, Happy Hanukkah, and they said, Happy Hanukkah, and they say, hey, Merry Christmas, and I say, hey, Merry Christmas to you, you know, and they're not offended, and we don't get on each other's nerves, but I think this country has become way too overly sensitive to things like God bless you, Merry Christmas, have a great day, you know, be careful, and enjoy life and be safe. And, you know, all of these things that we say to people, they're wonderful, joyful things to say. I would never think that I'm trying to hurt somebody by saying Merry Christmas. How silly is that, right? You know, God has blessed us all, no matter where you're at. If you're able to listen to this radio show right now, you are blessed. You are blessed with two things for sure. Number one, you're blessed to be alive. And number two, you're blessed with technology that you're able to listen to this show. Some of you that are hearing impaired, you are blessed because you can read it. That's right. We have hearing impaired folks that have the hearing impaired stations, and they watch, and they read, and they respond. But they feel blessed. They feel blessed, folks. Do you understand? Because they have eyes that can see. And those of you that have ears that can hear, consider it another blessing that you have. If you're able to look around and see the beauty and to be able to see the lights and the tinsel and the presents and all of the things that you think about when you think about Christmas, consider that another blessing because you have your sight. You have an ability to communicate. So don't think that you're not blessed because you are. And you should be happy. No, you should be truly joyful to know that you are in a position where you are right now, no matter where you're at. And you're able to hear this and hear my voice and hear me say to all of you out there, Merry Christmas and God bless you. It's been a great week. We're going to bring in Father Michael Pacella. We're going to bring in also Richard Kilblaine on here. And look, we are excited to be here, folks. I know I am. I'm very excited to be here. You know, it's Christmas Eve, right? People are like, don't you pre-record these things? No, man, this is live, baby. This is live. On the East Coast, it's 10:24 right now, folks. So all you East Coasters and all you kids that are listening, guess what? You ain't got too much longer before comes ho-ho-hoing, you know what I mean, to your home. So you better be making sure that before too much longer that you kiddos are getting ready for bed so that you can enjoy that Santa Claus part of Christmas. So, Rich, Father Michael Pacella, good evening. God bless you. Merry Christmas. Thank you for being here.
Merry Christmas to you as well, James and Rich.
Same here. Merry Christmas to you and your family and all the listeners out there.
You know, we've all spent a few Christmases away from home.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them have been more memorable.
I think that's something we might talk about is, you know, before we get into any other discussion, what was it like being deployed, you know, during Christmas, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I want to point this out. The Army will shut down, stop fighting a war for three holidays. Thanksgiving, Christmas, and Super Bowl Sunday. And I'm here to tell you, of the wars I've been to, conflicts. Haiti, Super Bowl Sunday stands out better. But anyway, you guys want to bring up some of your memories of being deployed on a Christmas?
I was deployed during Vietnam. We were supposed to have Bob Hope come, but the war got pretty hot where we were on the line, and he wasn't able to come. And so the sailors threw all the Christmas trees and all the decorations overboard. And I was also deployed because the commander didn't want me to leave at Christmas time when I was in Korea. And in the year 2000, first one was 71. And so, you know, when you hear that song, I'll Be Home for Christmas, it kind of tears your heart out. You have to be there and do your duty and serve. That's for sure.
Actually, bring that one up. Whenever I hear that song, you know, I'm dreaming of a white Christmas, I have a flashback to Ranger School. And the reason is, as I was a Winter Ranger, the class I was in was going to graduate 1 week before Christmas. That was hanging over our head. And so when I went through, there was only three phases, the city phase of Benning, mountain phase at Dahlonega, Georgia, and the swamp phase was Florida. And I remember, you know, as time passes, you forget the misery, how miserable it was, and you just remember the funny stuff. So I remember we were going through a swamp, and it was up to our crotches. And remember, it's the winter, so it's just above 40 degrees. It's like 42, 43, and you're wet. And there's no, you know, if it drops below 40, they got to pull, because the year before they actually had a foreign national soldier going through the Ranger School die of hypothermia. Now, since then, they've actually had like five die. And so the word was, if the thermometer drops below 40, we got to get out of the swamp, okay? It didn't do any good. We're cold and wet. But anyway, we're walking through there. I remember this. Here's our patrol going through the swamp. We're wading through the swamp. And one guy softly starts singing, I'll be home. Oh, no, excuse me. I'm dreaming. The last line's the one that really hit me. I'm dreaming of a white Christmas. And all of a sudden, everybody just starts picking it up. So there we are going through the swamp, and everybody's like softly singing this song. And then you get to the end. If only in my dreams. We're all going to break down crying. But whenever I hear that song, I always have flashbacks to the swamp face of Florida. So anyway, James, what's your story?
Well, I had a few Christmases away from home. The first one was in 1987, and I was at Fort Stewart, Georgia. And we had just came back from, well, we did Bright Star, and then we did an Operation Ocean Venture exercise where we were supporting the Ranger Battalion out of Hunter Army Airfield. Mm-hmm. And when we came back, it would have been first part of December, and I pulled duty on Christmas Eve. You know, I was I had a CQ runner on Christmas Eve. And then 2 days after Christmas, I was pulling guard duty in the motor pool. So that was my first Christmas away from home. And 1988, I did.
How did
make
it make
it
you
home.
Feel? How did you feel? Young soldier, missing Christmas?
Oh, I was very young. See, I was 19 years old. You know, I remember feeling a little bit sad and sorry for myself. Until, like I said, I looked out and I started realizing there's a whole lot of people not going home for Christmas. It's not just me. And for me, that was and being on duty during Christmas. That's whenever you learn how really cool that some of the officers and non-commissioned officers really are, because that's when they bring you pizzas, or that's when they bring you, you know, a pie or a cake or a Christmas present even, you know. And I mean, I got all
that. That's because they were young privates pulling guard duty on Christmas, too. They know, right?
Yeah, they did. And then, of course, Desert Storm, I was away from home for Christmas, 1990.
How'd you celebrate it? How'd you, like I said, Christmas is there. The three holidays where you will shut down the war to celebrate. I mean, it's only like Thanksgiving, They got to deliver you turkey. They
it was kind of cool because we had so where we were at, we were on a screen line right on the border, you know.
You were in the 24th Infantry Division.
Yeah, the 24th Infantry
in the Crystals, yeah.
We were in an area known as the neutral zone. If you ever look at that area between Saudi Arabia and
McCaffrey, McCaffrey, not McChrystal, McCaffrey, yeah.
Yeah, McCaffrey.
Was your division commander, yeah.
And so they brought a GP medium tent out. And so, you know, number one, we had been sleeping in our vehicles the whole time. So, I mean, we got there in August. We never slept inside anyway. So, you know, we showers were usually a water bottle, and then they brought little portable showers out later. Meals, we cooked our own meals. You know, it was MREs or there was a couple-mile walk. You know, if you wanted to walk to a chow hall, there was, you know, the battalion chow hall would feed. Well, on that day, so right before Christmas, they brought the tent out. We had to put this stinking tent up. We hated it. But we also got a Christmas tree and some ornaments. And they said, look, said, you know, we're in a foreign country that doesn't celebrate Christmas. So all of your Christmas celebrations got to be on the inside. So we got to go inside, and then somebody had a Coleman heater, a Coleman stove, and we cooked some soup and some different things. And, it was actually, it wasn't so bad. And then the British had a contingent that was close to us. And on Christmas Day, we actually did march to the chow hall, the chow tent. And we had Christmas with some British soldiers. Now, I'll tell you how backwoods country that I was, okay? I had never eaten British Cadbury chocolate in my life, okay? Never. I didn't know what it was. And so, you know, this is 1990, folks. You know, I'm sure Cadbury chocolate been around a long time. But, you know, it wasn't a staple on the table in West Virginia, that's for sure. And this British soldier was sitting here, and he was picking at some chocolate. And he looked at me, he said, you want some? And I said, yeah. You know, and I just remember tasting that chocolate. And I was thinking to myself, that is the best tasting chocolate I've ever ate in my life. And, you know, he wrapped that whole candy bar up, and he gave it to me, you know. And I said, share it with your mates. And then, you know, I gave him something, and he gave me something else, and we exchanged some batches and as well. It was a good Christmas. I can't complain.
No, that sounds like the truth.
It was. And then, you know, of course, I had the other one when I was, you know, in Iraq. And then, you know, those are the two combat zones. When, and I'll tell you, the Christmas, this last Christmas in Iraq, I don't remember celebrating Christmas. I don't remember much about it. I don't know what happened. I know we got called out because somebody's convoy was under fire and we had to go out. I remember that.
Yeah. So, that's the problem. From what I understand, because I write about truck units, if they're on the road, the only guys that are not shutting down for Christmas are those that are actually out on a patrol or out on a convoy. So you were probably on a convoy. The most you got was Christmas leftovers. They would always save, you know, because there's the tradition with what the meal is, and they'll save that cranberry sauce and all that for you.
Well, I got to make a phone call. You know, that was a big deal, to make a phone call and call and talk to
my
kids. But you know, it was, I don't remember much about it. So obviously it must've been one hell of a night.
Yeah. I don't remember much about my Christmas in Panama, but I remember the lead up to it. All right. Because we deployed like a week or two before Christmas. But I first have to say my first Christmas overseas was as a young private in Okinawa. Okay. And that got me used to being home, away from home. And the thing is, I mean, the unit I was in, we celebrated Christmas. We had a Christmas party. I got a picture of one of the sergeants dressed up as Santa Claus, and me, I was CQ. That's right. I was charge of quarters. I was CQ runner. I was PFC, CQ runner during, so everybody else is civilian. I'm the only guy in uniform, and I'm sitting on Santa's lap, all right? My first Christmas overseas, and it's just that bonding is what I appreciated. My the next Christmas, I was a lieutenant overseas in Germany, and it was really neat because everybody invited you to their homes. Everybody, you always had an invitation, even when I was back in the States, you know, for Bragg or something like that. You know, if you were a bachelor, you were invited to somebody's home for Christmas. Now, I say that because my last year in Germany, I had staff duty, okay? And the way it worked was, in Germany, first of all, the soldiers, the NCOs, the officers, they invited soldiers to their home. And the Germans were very, the older Germans, the older generation, very supportive of the U.S. Army in there because they knew the German Army, the Russian Army. They hated them, and they really were glad we were there. And so they would invite, you know, soldiers to their homes for Christmas. So there was enough invitations. No one had to stay in the barracks. But there's a problem here. There are some soldiers you don't want going into some German's home. They're your bad soldiers. They're the ones that get coal and sticks in their stockings for Christmas. And it's the first
sergeant. I got a story from Korea when you're finished.
Go
ahead. I got a story. I got called
to the
emergency
room. Let me finish mine first, and then you can throw yours in, because you're probably
saying,
going to
when you said the bad,
sit on top
bad
of it.
Soldiers. Yep.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Okay. So there are bad soldiers. And the first sergeant goes through the list, and he is like, no, these guys aren't going to anybody's home more for Christmas. Okay. So it's random as to what lieutenant gets the duty for that night, except for two nights, New Year's Eve and Christmas Eve. Since Christmas is a family event, a married lieutenant will not pull staff duty. Since New Year's Eve is a partying event, they always put a married officer on duty. But for Christmas, because all the troublemakers, the bad, as Father Michael says, Chaplain Pacella says, is the bad soldiers get left behind. So they pick the senior lieutenant, first lieutenant, to pull staff duty on Christmas Eve. And guess who got the honor?
Yeah.
Oh my! It was that night. I was just breaking one fight after another. It's like I would go out on my rounds and there's another fight and I'm breaking it up. And there was one riot. It wasn't a riot. There was a fight. It was a crowd. And I had to defuse that. And I went back and I was a cartoonist. And I remember inspired. I had Santa Claus. Oh, no, I had one picture drawing of me with a staff duty officer, SDO, brassard on my arm with a smoking .45 in my head and a dead Santa Claus there. Because that makes my rounds. I feel like, anybody seen Santa Claus? Because if I see him, I'm going to kill him. That was a very bad night to pull staff duty. So anyway, Father Mike, Chaplain Pacella, tell me about your experience.
And when I was in Korea, Christmas Eve, I got called to the emergency room. I get there, and the doc's there pleading with this guy, and he was kind of close to him, and the guy was inebriated. He had punched out his wife because she was having an affair. He was up closer to the DMZ. We were down further, Camp Humphreys. And so this doc is trying to plead with him, and I finally said, excuse me, and I yelled at the guy and said, get up and go in the other room. And the MPs were going to take him away because he came to see his wife, but he found out she was having an affair. But anyway, I got the MPs to back off. I told them that I would take care of the situation. He got sober. We got them together. You know, it was so cold in Korea. But, I mean, you know, they're just pathetic times where, you know, everybody's disjointed. Nobody's where they want to be necessarily. But unfortunate family, you know, so – But I kept my distance in case he swung at me, and I got him to move because the doctor, he was also a Harvard grad, young guy. He was trying to appeal to him, and I said, no, let's just get him out of the way because he was causing a scene in the ER. So let's get him to another room. And then I dealt with the military police, and they agreed with me. They wouldn't take him back to Camp Casey. And we got the wife and husband together. So it started out pretty nasty, but it ended up pretty good.
Yeah, you know, that, I'm glad you pointed out those things. See, the problem I found was that you have all these young soldiers who that we have certain expectations for Christmas. Now, in my case, my parents were separated, and Christmases were after the divorce was not really fun because it was always like, so who are you going to spend Christmas with? So I really just wanted to spend it by myself. So when I got overseas, I was okay with it. But for young soldiers who are used to having their family and loved ones around, and then they're in a foreign environment, foreign culture, people don't even speak their language, and, you know, and they're not really that good. They're not well behaved. And they get left out. They don't have that family structure around them. Mm-hmm. The worst comes out of soldiers, the bad soldiers. I mean, we pointed out the good part of Christmas in the military is the true spirit of Christmas. Everybody wants to invite someone over to their home for Christmas. Okay? In the Army is your family. Army is your family. That's the great part about it. So everybody was getting invited, okay, except the bad soldiers. Now, I mentioned the gang fight or whatever. Here's the thing was, by that time, I'm in my last year in Germany. It was a three-year tour. All these soldiers knew who I was, and they knew I was reasonable, rational, and they could come up and talk to me and stuff like that. I was prior service enlisted. And here's a funny thing. So I'm walking around. I remember, and I saw this crowd. I'm like, oh, shit. You know, and you could tell it. You could tell there was the hostilities were there. It was two guys getting ready to fight, and the crowd was around them. And as soon as they threw a punch, either they backed off to create a circle or it was a gang fight. And so I remember walking up there, and I tell soldiers, lieutenants, you know, when you go in there, that you want to break up a fight, never, never, ever, ever get between two soldiers. Never, never get between them. You're laughing. You never get between them because they'll start beating on you. Okay.
Well, I kept my distance, but I got them to move.
Yeah, yeah. But in my case, I walk in there, and okay, for those people who are offended by profanity, you need to cover yours right now. But you have this command voice, and you walk in and are like, what the fuck is going on here? And all of a sudden, and you yell it loud enough, everybody's looking at you. You're not between them. Instead of you got two groups of people looking at you, they're ready to throw punches. Now they're looking at you. And I always told people, said, never be walking around without the CQ, the charge of quarters, who's an NCO. when you're walking through a company, especially on Christmas Eve, you better have somebody with you. And here's the reason why. This is the perfect example. And as soon as they saw me, they recognized who I was. And the two guys who were like having to argue, they come running. Oh, sir, he said this. He did this. No, sir, he did this. He did this. You know, and they're like both of you pointing fingers at each other. And I'm sitting there going, all right. To one guy that says, you go with this CQ, and you go over there and tell him what the hell. You come over with me. What we're doing, we're dragging the crowd apart. So we get them separated, and they're all like talking crap about what the other guy did, how he started, how he's at fault. And I'm sitting there like, I'm not listening to a damn thing they're saying. All I'm trying to do, I'm just paying attention to what's going on around me, okay, situational awareness. So finally I look at him, and I've listened to him enough, and go, I'm like, all right. And I'm yelling to everybody, yeah, all right. I want everybody to follow me to battalion headquarters, and I want you to write a statement about what you saw here. So I drug them back to the headquarters, got them in there, grabbed a yellow legal pad, pulled out sheets of papers and gave them to them, gave them pens, sat them down, and sat there. Let me tell you, don't ever ask a soldier to write anything down. First they ain't writing. Most of the people sit there looking at that sheet of paper and then write and said, oh no, I saw a crowd that walked up to watch what was happening. Nobody saw anything. But the thing was, they sat there for up to 30 minutes trying to figure out what to say. By the time they forgot about the fight, whatever there was to fight, and they left. They were all going back to the roof. And that's all I was concerned about was that was it. It was done. I prevented a riot. So, yeah, that's one of my funnier memories about Christmas in the Army overseas.
You know, Rick, you mentioned earlier, you know, about how people express a sense of family. You know, St. Paul revealed something to us that we received from him. And that's what Jesus said about it being more blessed to give than to receive. And I think that sometimes we misunderstand what this holiday is all about. I always told my children, it's Jesus's birthday, but you get to get the gifts because God's an unselfish God. But I think that there was a spirit of giving in our desperate situations where you needed to give yourself as far as fellowship was concerned. You know, you need to give an ear because somebody just needed to talk about how it was back home, that kind of thing. But I just wish that we could understand that really it's all about giving. And, of course, God gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believes in him shall not perish but have everlasting life. And I think the soldiers, even though there's some craziness, like you were saying, I think there really was that spirit of family, that spirit of support, that family attitude of giving oneself. Because we really needed people. We needed camaraderie, not so much, you know, gifts or things of that nature. But I just wish that we could understand that it really is more blessed to give than to receive. And I think that, you know, sometimes we train our children, you know, you're going to get this, you're going to get this, what do you want? And I think we need to train them early to give to the less fortunate. We need to share with them that it's about giving, not about receiving.
Well, I actually like James' story about that British soldier, you know, giving him his chocolate.
Yeah.
You know, for me, when you talk about giving, it's really about children and grandchildren, okay? As you get older, you really don't care. Now, my wife and I will talk about, like, what do you want for Christmas? I don't know. If I need something, I buy it. I mean, so the excitement of the gift giving is not there anymore. But the But you know, it tends to be about the kids and the grandchildren. Okay,
mm-hmm.
I think that's where the spirit of the giving is.
Right. Right, and I think from St. Nicholas, as I shared in my sermon today, that's kind of where we get that tradition, you know, that, you know, it is to give and even sacrificially and even in a secretive way, but I just don't want us to train our children to be greedy or to, you know, I want this, I want that, I want this. But to see that also part of it is giving to others who might have less. You know, Jesus even talked about if you have two coats and someone else doesn't have anything. You know, we talk about the common good. I just want to instill generosity because we serve a generous God. And God lavishes all good things upon us to enjoy. And now I get your drift, and I hear you, and we want to bless our children. But I know for my kids, I wanted them to understand this is Jesus' birthday. But because God is unselfish, you get the gifts so that they have that understanding of sacrifice.
Actually, I did something right after 9/11. If you remember, they mobilized the National Guard to come and provide additional security for all the military installations, and you were there. Fort Eustis was, we right. had a guard unit mobilized to pull gate guard. So, you know, having been deployed overseas, you know, this Christmas, I had my daughter bake cookies. Mm-hmm. And we got in the car, and we drove up. You know, I told her about the sacrifice. These soldiers, they're away from home. They're what it's like to pull duty on Christmas Day.
Mm-hmm.
And so we loaded up the car. She had the plate of cookies. We drove up to the gate. And she gives it to the guards, telling me, like, hey, look over here. And inside the guard's jacket, he had just piles and piles of plates of cookies. He said, people have been driving up all day long. He said, we can't eat all these cookies.
Cool.
But that was good. That spirit of giving was there. You know, and the guy's telling me this. You could tell he's getting, you know, he's past, he's beyond feeling sorry for himself. He said they're going like, seriously, when the guys quit bringing us cookies, we can't eat them all.
But see, that's the beautiful thing. But even when Moses was collecting from for the tabernacle, and there was so much that he wanted and needed to build it, but then he said enough. And I think sometimes, even with not-for-profit or nonprofits, sometimes, you know, there is a need, but we need to know when to say enough so there's not waste, or maybe we can channel it elsewhere so that I'm not throwing things out. But there is a spirit of generosity in our country especially. And I just think it's a beautiful thing. You know, I've said this many times on the radio program. It's more honorable to beg than to steal. And I see people, you see people, James sees people that are begging on the street. And, you know, they're looking for a hand up, not a handout. And we're trying to encourage them and share with what we have. And because, you know, they maybe had a job and now they lost the job and they're embarrassed and they're hungry and they're without a home. And so, you know, when we think about the first Christmas in that cave, and we think about, you know, the trough, and we think about the animals and just Mary, Jesus and Joseph, you know, just a very humble thing. We've made Christmas into, you know, all glitters and light, and that's wonderful. Jesus is the light of the world. But I just think that, again, we got to focus on those that don't have as much. And as we shared today about St. Nicholas, you know, he gave in secret, and it's just wonderful. Rich, you relayed a story to me about the person in the store that saw families who couldn't afford certain things, but yet someone anonymously gave money. And I think that's the beautiful thing, the sacrifice of giving. I know my wife, during big storms and things like that, you know, she will bring food to someone, leave it on the porch, you know, give money. In other words, you do things. God sees what you're doing in secret, and he promises to reward you openly, whether it's praying, fasting, giving. And I just think that this is a wonderful time to express our love. Now, doesn't mean we're supposed to get in debt, and, you know, because we want to compete with the Joneses, you know, we're going to put all these gifts on the credit card and then be in a bad way, you know, come January, February. But it's just the thought, whether it's baking cookies or going to visit someone, you know, just being kind. And I think that's the true spirit of Christmas. You know, the commercial and consumerism, you know, just tries to get us, you know, to buy this and end of the year and buy the car and this and that. And that's really not what it's all about. But it is being generous, just like you said, Rich. And I think that that's something that, you know, we need to do all year round.
Actually, all three of us grew up poor. All right.
Mm-hmm.
And in that, you don't have a lot. And you appreciate any little thing you give. And I remember one of my uncles, his kids had, they were grown up. They weren't completely grown up. They were in teenage years. So mm-hmm. he had the tricycle and the wagon and all that. So he repainted, they were all worn out. He repainted them and gave them to us. And we were about the age that he had. He didn't have much either, all right? So it was recycled present. You know, and the thing is, it didn't take us, my brothers and I were wild. It didn't take us long to destroy them. They were metal. But you know what? You know, that's the first and only time that family gave us any presents, and we knew they were recycled presents, but we appreciated that. You know, there's the meaning behind it. So, what was it like, you know, to be poor and on Christmas? You appreciate anything anybody gives you.
Right. Hand-me-downs, you know, but the family, you know, they were pretty well off. And because my father was 100% disabled vet, normally in the veterans hospital, you know, they brought around a little cart, and you had to choose what you wanted. And I remember one year taking this shirt, this little button-up shirt. Somewhat embarrassing, you know, kind of you compare yourself with other people, and maybe your clothes are tattered. We got a lot of hand-me-downs because my parents got married at 35, and so we were a lot younger than our other cousins. And so normally, you know, we got stuff from them, and you're grateful, but it's not the same, you know, as having your own. But, you know, the man complained about not having any shoes until he saw the man who had no feet. And so you have to be grateful. But because we have understood what it is to be hungry, what it is to pass out because of hunger, what it is to be cold, it makes us a lot more sensitive that all those people that are hurting aren't just lazy. They're not people who, you know, just don't want to work. You know, there's a lot of bad breaks, unfortunately, addictions, things of that nature. And so it just behooves us. I had a lady call me the other day, and as you know, we're a mission, but we support a couple of large ministries that help people with housing, with food, shelter, and things of that nature. And I felt real bad. This woman called me and very respectful and looking for rent money, this and that. And I explained to her that we were a mission, but that we did support these other two. And that, you know, she said, well, I'll call them then. And so I just think we have to make people feel like it's not always their fault. There are people that you know, are given to sloth and they don't want to show initiation. But there are people that are having a bad time. And it's just so wonderful when you can be gracious. The Bible says that the righteous is gracious and gives all day long. There's something about sowing abundantly and not sparingly. I'm not saying about wasting, like, you know, throwing the money on the bar, you know, and it's the rent money and get a, you know, have a beer for everyone. I'm not talking about that recklessness, but I am talking about sharing what you have, you know, with others, because you never know. Someday you may need someone to share with you, and you're kind of sowing into the situation, into God's economy. So I just hope that we can stay focused. There's a lot of abundance, a lot of eating, a lot of wonderful things that are taking place. But I'm just hopeful that we could be cognizant of those who really are feeling bad because they really can't, you know, buy something for their children. I remember this one guy in one of my churches, and, you know, he grew up poor like me in the same city of Newark, New Jersey. And I remember, you know, he just put stuff on a credit card, you know, bicycle, this and that, because he didn't have, now he had a job, but there's some people that really struggle, especially if you compare yourself with other people. And, but, you know, also with having people over, you know, Jesus said, don't just have the people over that can repay you, you know, also give you a nice dinner, but have those that can't repay you. And those that would like to sit at a beautiful table, you know, remember Tiny Tim and Dick and Story, you know, where they could sit with nice silverware and nice plates and nice food and feel a sense of dignity and not making them feel like, you know, they're less than. But I think we have to do that and empower people, because a lot of people are hurting today.
Actually, I want to talk about the role of the church during these times, okay? Not just Christmas, but also hard times. Because you've related one story of a person contacting you, but you've had a number of people reach out, and yours is not a big church. It's a small church. I mean, I'm surprised how in the world do they find the CEC. In Williamsburg.
Yeah.
But because of my wife, you know, I also go to the St. Bede Catholic Church. And you've asked us to bring in groceries and stuff like that to set up there, because there's always needy families who come in like we're destitute or whatever. And when I walk in to St. Bede, you'll see bags, paper bags of groceries stacked up. And you go, like, what's that for? Because people in need turn to the church.
That's right.
And the church provides them food. So let's talk about that.
Well, the Bible says that in the early days, they sold, like, extra property. It was a communalism, not a communism, so that there wasn't a needy among them. They had a great boast that they took care of their own. There are a lot of communities that do that. The Jewish community, the Italian community, there are a lot of communities where they take care of their own. Even the African-American, if you remember the clothes, FUBU, for us, by us. And I think that we have to have that sense that we are our brother's keeper. And so when people call, and I've related this story one time, a lady said, I need money. And this was when I was a young man, before I was married. And I said, well, if I don't give you Jesus, I haven't given you anything. And I finally gave her something. And a year or so later, I came back to the church. She was in the pew, dressed, and she gave me a check to pay me back for what I gave her. She just needed a hand up. And so, yes, we have to reach out. You know, the Salvation Army does that, you know, with feeding, helping. It's part of the message. You know, James says that you can't tell a person, go away, you know, be filled, be warm. No, give them food, give them a blanket. Mother Teresa did that with all kinds of communities, Hindu, Muslim. She didn't give people a litmus. So, no, we do have a great responsibility to the poor, and we'll be judged not so much by our academic and theological prowess, but what you did to the least of these, my brethren, you did to me. Matthew 25. I was hungry. I was thirsty. I was lonely. I needed visitation. I was in prison. And said, Lord, well, when did we neglect you? He said, when you neglected the least of these, my brethren. And so we really do. And it's not what people would like to call the social gospel. Look, we're in the flesh. When I'm hungry and my stomach is growling, I can't hear you preaching the gospel. Okay, so we have to be practical. Now, there's so much that we can do to help, and I'm sure people, you know, take advantage. I know people who go to one church and to another, whatever. However, we have to show the generosity of God. A good friend of mine, he did four degrees at Harvard. We pastored a similar church in New England for many, many years. I was 20 years. He was probably 21. He just wrote a beautiful book on Catholic social teaching for evangelicals. And it's a very holistic understanding of our moral obligation. When we talked to the young lady last time we were on, we talked about our moral obligation. And so really we do have, you know, to the people in Appalachia, to different other people in different parts of the world. A good friend of mine does a lot of work in Africa. The Bible says that true and undefiled religion is this: to visit widows and orphans in their distress. Doreen and I went to visit a widow last night. And to keep yourself unstained by the world. But these are the weak and the vulnerable. And sometimes, you know, we have to sell that one coat or give that additional coat over to those who have none at all. And it's not like, you know, you're feeling sorry or you don't think that they have to pull themselves up by their bootstraps and be entrepreneurial. There are some people, again, we talk about teaching them how to fish, not always giving a fish, but they need a hand up, need to show them how to fish or show them as far as a skill is concerned. So I think also, Rich, we looked at a building for down the road, but I want to have a certain kind of training that we can provide for people. So you can tell people get off the streets, you can tell them this, but if you don't provide some vocational training or some kind of, like I shared with you when I went to Italy and I went to that drug rehab training. I mean, they teach them very marketable graphics, all kinds of stuff, even had a winery there. And so that when they get out of this program, they're able to support themselves. They have a skill. And you know that most skills are perishable. So no, you're absolutely right. The church has to feed the hungry, clothe the naked, you know, bury the dead, you know, take care of people in that way, but certainly share the gospel, but not only talk. You know, there's a quote that they say St. Francis of Assisi said it. Some people say he didn't, but he said, preach the gospel at all times, and if necessary, use words. So I think actions speak louder than words. Jesus began to do and teach, and so did the apostles. Healing people, praying for people, visiting people, clothing people, but not to make them feel less, to make them feel a part of the family that we want to know that we're taking care of our own.
All right. I like that. And we had a guest on our show a while back who made backpacks for homeless.
Mm-hmm.
And what resonated for me, what I still remember from that show, is when the question was asked, what's the best thing the government, you know. See, the government takes our taxes, takes our money, and redistributes it. What's the best thing that we could do, to the government could do, to solve this problem? And what he said really struck me, because having spent most of my life working for the government, creating a government organization to solve a problem does not solve the problem.
Mm-hmm.
The best thing to do is find private organizations that
yes.
are solving the problem and invest in them.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, you don't brag about it. Only every now and then you let it slip about somebody in desperation comes to our church looking
right.
for help, and you provide it
right.
for them, whatever it is, food,
mm-hmm.
money, whatever, you provide
right.
it for them.
Mm-hmm.
And as I know, the Catholic Church is really, really good about that.
Absolutely.
So for people out, you know, and you're saying we got to do this for people, but, you know, a lot of us don't have, we have the means, but not the connection. We're not the ones, like, look, I'm going to tell you, a lot of those people out there with the little paper, you know, the cardboard sign saying, hey, I'm homeless, I need work.
Yeah.
They're panhandlers.
Mm-hmm.
They make a
mm-hmm.
living at this. They've got
mm-hmm.
a good car. And it's hard to tell between those who really need your help and those who don't. Okay. They just don't want to put in a day's labor.
But the early church.
But I would advise, if you
God.
Want to help the poor and the destitute, invest in the churches.
Yeah.
The churches that have a program for helping the dead. You know, like I said, when I walk into St. Bede and I look to my right, as we're coming down to going into the cathedral, I look to my right, there's like, you know, they have a closet and there are bags of groceries stacked up outside it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and all they do is people just go and, you know, you're going shopping and you buy an extra bag of groceries, non-perishable
right.
stuff that's going to last
right.
a while. And that's what you ask us for, right? Non-perishables
yes.
that you can have there. So when that family and I'm like, as small as you are, where you're located, like, how in the world are people even finding you in your church?
Mm-hmm.
But you're sitting
yeah.
there and you know, it's very small. You have your office, and you go, you're older than me. I'm retired, and you show up, you teach college, but you show up, you're off, you're there, and people walk in.
Mm-hmm.
So my advice is, for those of you out there wanting to be charitable, whatever, and you don't know where to, you know, invest your money, you know, and you don't want to invest all overseas, you want to feed people in your local neighborhood.
That's right.
Find a church that takes
yep.
care of locals. Okay?
We were given
you got anything
a lot
to add to that?
Food. Yeah, we were given a lot of food, and I called the Salvation Army because the commander's a good friend of mine. Then we have the House of Mercy, which is attached to the old St. Bede's that's by the college. And, you know, we have to support these types of ministries that are housing people, feeding people, getting them employment and training. We have to help everybody. All of us, if we're be honest, somebody gave us a hand up. Somebody opened a door for us. Somebody helped us. I can remember when I was going to college, I wrote to the president of the college and I told him what happened to me 50 years ago tonight off the coast of Vietnam and receiving Christ in my heart. And he let me come. I had no qualifications on a probationary way. And he helped me. And there were other people in the school. They helped me. And we just have to realize that in this journey, there are people, you helped me with my doctoral dissertation, that God puts in our lives to help one another. We all need help in one way or another. It could be with our marriage, with our finances, with our children, with our relatives, with our health, whatever it might be. And we just have to realize that we're here to serve one another. And that's what's gratifying. Not that we shouldn't attain our goals and write our books and travel where we want to go, but we need to realize that there are some people that haven't had the opportunities that we have had. They maybe don't have the apparatus that we have. And so I'll tell you, even when I teach, I always used to look on who was in the school. This was at a different university, on probation. And I always try to give them special attention and tutor them because I was there many, many years ago. And I just think that sometimes we forget, Rich, how poor we were, how down and out we were. You know, for me, going into basic training at 17, I got calcium deposits on my nails because we weren't allowed to drink milk growing up because my father had to have it for his coffee. And I'm not talking about the powdered milk. That was later when we were with the Marines on the carrier, you know, and that stuff, I don't care if you make ice cream out of it, it's terrible. But I got to drink real milk at every meal. And
gotta love Baby Chow, right?
Say again?
I said you gotta love Baby Chow.
Yep. And so, you know, I was glad to get three squares, you know. And, you know, and whether later in the Army with the MREs, this and that. And I think that especially those of us who have a home, think about the fact that someone can't say, you know, they're in waiting to get home. Maybe they're in traffic. Maybe they have a car. Maybe they live in their car. But I can't wait to get home. There's something about security and having a home. And that's why the VA, it's been a wonderful thing for veterans to be able to get their own homes. Now, there are great benefits that we have received educationally as well as to buy a home because of our service. And some people may have to go into the military so that they can have benefits later on. They need to go with the motivation to serve, but there are great benefits. Many of us would not own homes today, at least I can speak for myself, unless we were veterans and we had the veteran benefit. And so, you know, there's just a lot of things that we want to help one another to go to school, to experience what we've experienced, and to have opportunities that we have had. You know, I tell a story. I was a trombone player when we lived in Newark, New Jersey. And the trombone or music teacher wrote a note home and said, Michael is really good. You should consider buying him a trombone. Well, I brought it home, and, of course, my family laughed because we could just about afford food. And, you know, you can't eat the trombone. But, you know, we sometimes don't have the same opportunities that other people have. And sometimes we take it for granted, especially in our country. You know, when you think about how many people in the world, and you've brought this up, Rich, before, compared to them, we're considered upper middle class, if not high class, compared to a lot of places I've been in the world. And I just think that we need to either visit those places. You know, when I've talked about service in the past, a person may not feel like they need to go into the military or they want to support the military, but go into the Peace Corps. You know, go someplace else where people are less fortunate and just, you know, share some of your skills and share some encouragement so that people could have the same opportunity. I'm grateful my grandfathers came over from Italy because I don't believe I ever would have had the opportunities in Italy that I've had in America. But he did what he did, and my other grandfather did what he did to give us a better life. And I'm just saying we should be sensitive to others that we can help so they can have a better life.
Well, you know, I asked each of us to talk about, because all three of us have grown up poor, but we have provided better for our children than we were provided. The thing about poverty is it really makes you appreciative of what little you have. And and as I had stated or tried to state in one of our previous shows, is that, you know, I had a house to live. I mean, as poor, it's all relative. As poor as I was growing up, it was not as bad as the homesteaders who came to that part of Oklahoma before me. I grew up hearing the stories of sod busters living in sod houses, and I'm going, you know, we all hear the stories like, I walked 5 miles to school uphill both ways.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm sitting there, I grow up, and no matter how poor I was, I'm going, my opportunities, I got a hell of a lot more, you know, my standard of living is better than those people who come here and first, well, not the people who went into the town. Seriously, when the towns opened up, they were like boom towns. They like boom, all of a sudden you have a town, and they had me. But those homesteaders that had to break sod, they had 4 years. They got 80 acres. They had 4 years to make it. And if they didn't, and there was a certain criteria they had, and they lost everything. And what happens is their neighbor buys them out. And so friends of mine who had, you know, were farmers, they were descendants of the guys that bought out all the homesteaders who had failed. So, you know, no matter how bad off I grew up, I knew there were people before me who had it tougher. All right. So, but we unfortunately, I think when we want to make up for it, and we want to we have wanted to provide for our children far more than we had, and I think we spoiled them. I don't think they have the same appreciations that we had.
Parents never owned a home, and I just wanted to address the early church regarding panhandlers. They would say, leave it up to God as to whether the recipients are worthy. In other words, whether somebody's scamming, make them believe they're blind and selling pencils or whatever it is, we just need to do the right thing. And I do think that we had an appreciation because we worked at very young ages to help support our families. When I went to work, and I'll never forget when I was 15, and I'll be 68 next month, I made $53 on tips in one day driving this little golf cart in the ShopRite, delivering the groceries to the cars. And, you know, my mom said, okay, you can have a hot chocolate in the machine out there, but you got to give me all the money. When my mother, when we got married, we had a very big Italian wedding, really a lot of money. And, you know, Lord laid on my heart, the widow, she's got all these outstanding bills. And we just have to realize that some people are dying younger because they have so much pressure on them. And maybe they need to learn how to build a crop. I've told the story many times about the man who sent a $75 insecticide. And this woman not only was able to have a crop for herself, she was able to sell to her neighbors. And all I'm saying is that there are people who don't have the know-how, you know, whether it's teaching someone mechanics, you know, all these dirty jobs we see on TV. There's a need for contractors, and there's a need for construction workers, as you did, Rich, as a West Point grad working on your master's degree. You did that kind of manual labor, and we just have to give opportunities.
Yeah,
now, unfortunately,
but the thing is, that wasn't a step down for me. That's the class that I come from. I'm the I'm the only member of my family to. There are a few that have gotten, you know, degrees, but I'm the only one to have become an officer. Okay, so and it's actually my brother who was a sergeant. Gunnery Sergeant, Marine Corps, set me up with these construction jobs. He got me into it because that's what he did in his cycle breaks. Was they all loved working with their hands, and so you know, it wasn't a step down for me, but
it was a skill, right? I mean, it's a skill.
Oh gosh, yes, I am really proud of that. I mean, I really enjoyed working with concrete again. I come from a family that works with its hands. And so you're judged. I mean, seriously, okay, I'm going to tell a funny story. So we had a Ranger school. And the thing I'm driving back to Oklahoma from Fort. We finish up at Fort Benning. We get our tabs pinned on us. And I'm driving back home for Christmas. And my uncle lives on the eastern edge of Oklahoma. My family lives in the central Oklahoma, north central. So I stopped by Uncle Paul's house, Coach Paul Bell. So I stopped by that house, and he's over with his neighbor. So I go over there. Now, here I am, the recent West Point graduate, officer. So everybody thinks I'm real haughty and all this stuff. And I remember my uncle looking at me and said, boy, we judge a man by the calluses on his hand. Show us your hands, boy. Okay, so you understand that, right? Show us your hands, boy. So I slap. Now, here's the thing. When you are exposed, when I told the story, it's like when we were in Florida, the temperature never got above 40, and then it would drop down below. When you're exposed to the cold that much, your hands swell and the skin splits. So we're not talking about calluses. We're talking about, yeah, I mean, your hand, I got all these cracks in my fingers.
Yeah.
You know, they're bad. My hands look mangled. When I threw them out there, they're going, those are the hands of a working man.
Uh-huh.
And I was thinking to myself, I said, you know, in the infantry, we judge a man by the calluses on his feet. So you
Amen.
Know.
That's right.
I know. Yeah, you're going to judge me on my hands. Seriously, you need to be looking at the bottom of my feet.
That's right.
But, you know, I never had hands that bad after that. But the point is, I came from that environment. There was nothing stepping down from that. That was for me just, you know, I was stepping up to be an officer, but I really, my roots are ingrained. And that, I think that's why I really enjoyed working with concrete and working with stone. I really was fascinated with what you could do with stone. Okay.
Getting back to the
charity,
okay,
and the giving.
Okay.
See, your sermon today, you talked about anonymous giving, all right?
Yes.
And you told a couple really good stories. I mean, you first started with, you know, to me, I'm going like, you mean St. Nicholas actually wrote that until he got to the part where he died? And they're going, oh,
right,
this
right.
is fictitional. All right.
Right.
But you talked about the idea of anonymous giving. And so there's probably a lot of listeners out there like, I would love. Oh, well, yeah, okay. So I'm going to point this out, and then you can talk about the advantage of giving anonymously rather than giving in person, because most people don't even know how to reach out and connect with people who are in need. We don't feel comfortable, you know. Okay. So I don't want, I see that person who has that sign like, hey, I need a work for food or whatever, and he really doesn't want to work for food. He wants money. Panhandler, or are they really in need? So
well,
how do
I
we reach
you
it to?
I told the church fathers dealt
well,
with
me,
that.
Let me throw this one out, and I'm going to turn it over to you
because
you can just
go
take
ahead.
Off. And I told you this story after your sermon.
Yeah.
I said, so I, you know, in Oklahoma, I was friends with a guy who was a salesman. When I say a salesman, I'm not traveling salesman, but he had a store. He worked in stores. And he told me about a shoe store, and that people, you know, who wanted to help the underprivileged out would go to the owner of the shoe store and give them, like hundreds of, we're talking when $100 went a long ways. And he'd give them like hundreds of dollars and say, because look, school year is when that's going to break a family. The amount of money you have to pay on new clothes and shoes and all this stuff, plus school supplies, that's going to break a family. And so people would come up and would give this shoe store hundreds of dollars and say, you pick the family this goes to. And the guy told me a story. He said, so the owner would watch. So as the family come in, and the kids were, you know, like they're going to buy shoes for the new school year, and the kids would go grab the popular shoes, and the mother would stop right. and say no, and steer them towards the cheap, the affordable shoes.
Right,
and
right.
that's how the guy knew. I mean, he could tell that's the family in need. And he would walk up and say, you can buy any shoes you want. There's a lot of ways for any listeners out there who want to give anonymously. And you can tell
right.
you can tell the spiritual reason why it's important to give anonymously rather than
yes.
giving money and getting your picture taken with this check handing to someone else.
Right, right.
So now it's your turn. That was your lesson today.
Yes. The motivation, it's called intentionality. We have to ask ourselves, why am I doing what I'm doing? You know, there are a lot of philanthropists, people that are doing wonderful things for so many people. Now, St. Nicholas himself was wealthy, and there are many people in church history that heard the gospel, and they sold all their riches, and they followed the Lord wholeheartedly and found true riches. But there are those rich that are looking for the tax break. You know, right now you have jobs like at Wendy's or other places like that, close to $15 an hour. And there are people that don't necessarily want to be doing that for the rest of their lives, but they want to get ahead. They want to buy a car. They don't want to have to walk to work or take public transportation. And I think sometimes when you watch somebody who's doing something notably, that it's important to encourage them. And even, I mentioned the Pentecostal handshake, even if you give them a $50 bill, just to, you know, you watch and they're doing their very best, they're trying to save. And the best thing is, and I told you I had a situation in the church that I served, it was a very good-sized church, and people used to give me money. Sometimes I wondered what their motivations were, because it could be a good-sized bill, and it could be a medium-sized bill. And I felt like the Lord said, you know the needs of the congregation. We had about 150 people. Get from them, and then you give it to someone, and you don't make a big fanfare. You're not looking for a tax break. Oh, I gave this amount. And so everybody could see what you've done. And we got to see how important it is to do in secret. And you can see somebody. I'll give you an example. Let's say that there's a person at my wife's school. It's a very expensive private Christian school. But let's just say you know that there's a family, military family. They really want their children to go and have that superior education. You could go to the school and say, I want to pay for someone's tuition without them knowing it. And so I'm just going to write a check. And I don't want them to know who it is. But see, sometimes when we get an increase, I know people that are businessmen that have made big money. And sometimes, Rich, you get an increase, and the Lord may want you to put an extension on your house. The Lord may want you to get rid of all the college bills, to buy a new car. But sometimes when you get an increase, God may want you to help somebody pay for seminary, help a family on a regular basis that are always short. Mom and dad are both working, and that $100 a month makes the difference for them. And God has given you the increase because we have to be channels for the Lord. And so he's giving it to us because he can trust us enough to give it to others. We're not going to take it. Let me tell you a little story about Lucifer. Lucifer was the worship leader in heaven. And you can find that in the book of Ezekiel, also in the book of Isaiah. He had pipes in his throat. But what happens sometimes is worship is supposed to be from God, through God in us, back to God. But Lucifer's problem in all his beauty, from God, and he let it stop in him rather than giving it back to God. For instance, Rich, somebody says, Rich, you're a really outstanding martial arts Aikido person. And you say, well, it wasn't me, you know, it's the Lord. Say, gee, it looked like you. I watched the video on TV. No, what you have to do in learning how to handle God's glory is you say, yes, thank you for acknowledging all the hard work that I put into Aikido. But I want to give glory to God because he gave me breath in my lungs every morning. He gave me the muscle mass, and he's given me the ability and the prowess and everything else, the motivation to keep training. So we have to know that what we've received from the Lord is not our own. So you come into some money and say, okay, Lord, all of a sudden I came into $1,000, $10,000. Why? Well, you're going to be having to put some money into your house. And so the Lord is providing. It happened to us one time when we were going to adopt a child. Guy and I said, the Lord told me you're going to need this money. I said, I don't think so. We've been adopting through the state. Sure enough, our last child. And so he knew before we did. But he recognized that whatever God gives us, and you can never outgive the Lord, because you're lending to the poor in the name of the Lord. And so if God uses you to bless someone, and it's not why you do it, but God will bless you abundantly, more than you can think or ask. It's beyond your imagination, but that's not the motivation. But we need to be a conduit. We need to be a channel so that the Lord can bless other people through us. And, you know, when we seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, all these things that the Gentiles seek shall be added unto us. We don't seek things. We seek God.
Well, my brother was a Mormon.
Uh-huh.
And he did a lot of charitable work. And the way he referred to it was he was building points up in heaven. Because there are the scriptures that talk about the judgment. I mean, we are saved by faith. It is the blood of the Lamb that has washed away our sins and allows us to go to heaven. But, you know, we are judged by our works. However,
yes.
You know, I've shared with you that I'm reading Emanuel Swedenborg, who conversed with angels and stuff, and he's going, no. See, when he looks at, what resonates with me is, so when we talk about the works, okay, what's the verse about works without love and love without works? Describe that real quick.
1 Corinthians 13, but also Matthew 6. That
what does it say?
We do good works. Matthew 6 says we do good works to glorify God, not to earn our salvation. And faith without works, St. James says, is dead. So you can say I have faith, but if you don't manifest it some way, it's dead faith.
And the thing I'm picking up, I mean, there's a lot of people who can say what Emanuel Swedenborg was writing about is heresy or whatever. But the theme is he had visited heaven, hell, and what the Catholics would call purgatory. But the point he was pointing out is, see, you're not judged by your works. You're not storing up points in heaven.
Right.
The good that you do on the earth is your interior. Is your building you're changing your interior love.
That's right.
So
gratitude.
You know, and so what I'm looking at in this message, the message tonight's show is about giving. You know,
yes.
Christmas is really the birth of Christ or whatever, but we really identify it as giving. Giving, we first start with giving to our children or giving to our grandchildren. That's the magic.
Mm-hmm.
For us, the magic of Christmas is children. Without the children opening presents, it doesn't have the same magic.
Mm-hmm.
So we have transgressed into giving. Giving during the holiday period, but it's giving all the time. And what I liked about what Emanuel Swedenborg's message is that giving, okay, if you pick that, that changes your heart. And especially, and what I'm reading now is, if you're, giving is an act of love. Well, what's the motivation behind it? If you're giving so you can get your picture taken with a check, handing it to some, underprivileged person, you're doing it for personal gain.
But that's right.
You're giving, when you talked about your message today about giving anonymously. Now, you said that about you. You went, all right, I'm going to, when you brought up that, you weren't talking, trying to hint to us. You were talking about yourself.
Right.
It's something you're trying to discover. And what Swedenborg was talking about is, no, you're giving it for the pure motivation of love, which comes from God.
Amen.
And what that does is that changes your interior, the soul. You have the physical, you're going to lose this physical body when you leave this earth and you're resurrected into the world of spirits, which is, what the Catholics call purgatory. And if you as I'm listening to the videos about near-death experiences, what they describe as heaven is not heaven. It's purgatory, okay?
Yeah.
And the thing is, the act you do is an expression of love you have, and that's what changes your heart and your spirit. So in the time we have left, so for those people out there going, I want to do something, but I don't want to help. I have the money, I have the means. I don't know how to go to. Now, in my case, you and I are friends. Anytime you needed help, I'm there to get, you keep thanking me for helping you out on your dissertation. I'm going, God, I learned probably more from you than you learned from me. It was mutual beneficial. So it kind of like cancels it out. For those people out there wanting, invest in those organizations that all have a success of helping the poor, okay, helping the underprivileged, helping the homeless. And that was the message I got from the guy who talked about backpacks for veterans or whatever.
Yes.
But let's talk about church. And let's put a plug in for your church, okay? So donate to your neighborhood church. But what churches help the poor? I know the Catholics have a very good program for helping the poor. And, for anybody else, tell them about how they can donate to your church, because, you don't brag about it. It slips out every now and then, but you have destitute and homeless people who come to your church seeking help.
Yeah. Our church is called St. Michael and All Angels Charismatic Episcopal Church. It has nothing to do with the Episcopal Church, but we're ruled by bishops. And we're 1166 Jamestown Road in Williamsburg, Virginia, 23185. I'm Father Michael
Pichella.
Yeah,
but Pichella, you have a website. You should have a website.
Yes, we do. We have a website. It's stmichaelcec.org. And, let me just say, just to start, I would advise, get yourself a few singles and keep them in your pocket. Just to begin to get in the habit of helping someone for whatever reason. Now, I'll say to guys a lot of times, hey, man, you're not going to drink. Or I'll give them the food. Let's say I'm leaving a restaurant. I'll give them the food that I had left over. Or I'll give them money, okay? But I'll tell them, look, don't go drinking now. You know, you need money. I'm glad to give it to you. But sometimes in a very practical way, because people will come to organizations, but let's get down to the individual. Just carry 10 singles, 5 singles in your pocket. And when someone asks, the Bible says that when you're asked, you should not refuse. Okay? And we have to leave it to God whether the recipient is worthy or not. But get in the habit of sowing. Get in the habit of doing something for someone without their knowledge. Let's say at work. There's a guy at work, and I know people who do this. His tires are looking really bad. Get together with some of the other workers, and let's say one particular tire. And so you get 10 workers together, 10 bucks a piece, and you leave 100 bucks on his desk and put the word tires on the outside of the envelope. The person doesn't have to know. They don't have to be shameful, but you're concerned that they don't have a blowout, that they don't get hurt or killed. And I just think that there are some very practical things that we can do together. Certainly we can do a lot more together. Okay, that's why we support big organizations. Also places in Africa, you know, all kinds of different places, people that I know that I trust. But let's start with the individual. You know, make sure you have some change or some cash on you. I normally don't like to carry a lot of cash, and not that I have a lot of cash, but if someone asks, I want to be able to respond. And let me tell you, as a priest, you're pretty much a target, you know, and you may not make a lot of money, but people know that you're going to respond in a benevolent manner. So I would say that's one way of starting the process. Then there are legitimate Samaritan's Purse. I'll tell you, Franklin Graham, he goes into an area in Jesus' name, whether they're Muslims or whatever, gives them clean water, a blanket, Mother Teresa, Sisters of Charity, all these beautiful organizations. We deal with subsidiarity in our own town, Salvation Army, House of Mercy, right here in Williamsburg, Virginia. These are people that are doing great work. We're all doing the same thing, trying to help people and tell them about the love of God. But we don't want to get ourselves off the hook, because sometimes we don't want – let me tell you a story real quick. This guy came up to me because I'm in my clerics. And he says, I need money. I need to go to a doctor's. He said, I've had this doctor since I was a kid, but it's 2 hours away. And I need to go. And so I said, well, John, I don't have any money. And I know the Holy Spirit said to me, use your gas card. And I put about $50 in this gas tank. He called me up, told me, I went to my doctor's appointment. He's got some problems. He's attended a church. He gave me accountability. Sometimes we'll make excuses, but the Lord just brought that to my mind. You don't have any money, but you have a gas card. Meet him over there at the gas station, fill up his tank. And so I'm just saying that we can look at organizations, Red Cross, this and that, but individually, we got to look around us, even family members. There are a lot of us that have poor family members that just, they're working hard. They're the working poor. They just need a boost. And every once in a while, we just got to give them a little something so that it helps what they're doing. You know, and you don't want to make them feel less than. It's a gift. It's something, you know, even clothing. You buy clothing, nice clothing for people that you know have a need. I've learned more of this from my wife's example than myself. But we need to get it down to the grassroots and start doing this stuff, not just through organizations, but individually. We need to reach out to other people. And God will bless you because you're doing God's work. I remember, Rich, you were saying when we talked to that young man that my son works with the backpacks for the homeless. You said, I don't know if you said it to him or you texted to us during the talk, you said, he's doing God's work. And that's what I'm saying. We need to be doing God's work and let God convict them. Like I said, that lady, I gave her, I'll never forget, I was reading the scripture. If you don't hear the cry of the poor when you cry, God won't hear you. It's Proverbs 21:13. And this girl asked me for money, and I was like, I was a young man. Oh, if I don't give you Jesus, I've given you nothing. Here, a year later, like I said, she was in the pew, dressed up in church with a check repaying me. She just needed a hand up. And so sometimes we're hardened because there are people that are scammers. But there are also people that are sincere. You know, I know a guy who works in the bank, and he said they don't study the counterfeit works or cash. They study the real cash. Okay, so when there is a counterfeit, it simply means that there's also the real thing. So not everybody's a fake. You know, I tell you, I give a lot of credit when I see people begging. They're not out stealing. That's got to be, you know, in the cold. I saw a lady the other day, and I wanted my wife and I to get back to her. She wasn't there when we went back. I mean, it was cold. And, you know, maybe some people are making a killing on it. Well, that's in their conscience. But it's what we do has everything to do with our spiritual development, our character development.
What I want to bring up, all right, I don't think all churches take care of the poor. Okay, I know yours does, and you've already announced how people can find you guys. I know the Catholic Church does. The Catholic Church,
yes.
Wherever I've been, the Catholic Church has always been set up. They have a history of helping out the poor. All right. In fact, I always enjoyed when I'm traveling, I'm driving across America by myself, love picking up hitchhikers. And I wanted to hear their stories. I give them a ride, but I want to hear their stories of life on the road, of independence. And one of the things they could point out is you could always go to a Catholic mission for a place to stay and get and eat. Okay. But I don't think, being raised Baptist, I don't ever remember the Baptist Church talking about taking care of the poor and the underprivileged. Okay?
You know,
I may be
wrong. When I was in Korea, I took care of an orphanage. And I met my first sergeant there one Saturday. And I'm not exaggerating. We moved 1,000 pounds of rocks so that they could raise a vegetable garden. And true and undefiled religion. You see, Rich, a lot of people make religion, the word religion, like it's a dirty word. Oh, I have a relationship with God.
Right, because there is a lot of hypocrisy in it.
Yes, is to take care of the widow and the orphans in their distress and keep yourself unstable. That's the gospel.
Right,
That's what we're supposed to do.
Jesus commanded that.
Yes.
Take care of the widows and the orphans.
That's right.
Look, I'm going to give – I want to give credit to the Mormon church, which most you know, conventional religions believe is a cult. But the thing is, you know, their values are based on Mason values. And if you're a Mormon – now, first of all, they all believe Jesus Christ is the living Son of God. Right, and Joseph Smith is not equal to Jesus. My brother was a Mormon. I got it all. There are some problems with the Mormon belief, but I will tell you this. The Mormons not only take care of themselves. If you're a Mormon and you're in trouble, the entire church will fall out to take care of you. I wish other churches had the same values, okay?
And rich people they're trying to save themselves by their works. That's not the truth.
I got it. Okay, you were talking about, you know, the spiritual values, but we're talking about if you're a Baptist and you're suffering, is the entire Baptist church going to turn out to help you out, come out and take care of your house? I don't think so. I never saw
Acts 4.
But I witnessed that with the Mormon church. Mm-hmm. And the thing is, my brother being a Mormon, not a good Mormon because he also drank and smoked, okay? So it's like you always take care of your fellow Mormons, but everybody else, but they are not hesitant to take care of anybody else outside the church. Why?
Right.
Because for them, that is building points in heaven. Because as you said, you're judged by your works, and they believe you're judged by the works. So they are they will do charitable works for other people outside their church. So anyway, I just throw that out because for those people who are looking to, you're not going to go up and give somebody money or whatever. You want to invest in a charitable organization, okay? We know Father Michael's Pacella's church, CEC Church, St. Michael's and All Angels, when anybody comes to him, he takes care of them. The Catholic Church does a really good job, okay? The Mormons do a really good job. Who else? What other churches do it? I don't think all
Salvation
of them.
Army. Salvation Army.
You're right. Your Salvation Army is built on that.
Yeah. Yep. That's right.
Okay. All right, guys. Hate to cut you off, but we got a minute and 22 seconds left. It is almost midnight on the East Coast, so that would officially mark this as Christmas Day. I want to wish each and every one of you a Merry Christmas. I want to thank each and every one of you for listening into the show, and I want each and every one of you to be blessed with the Christmas spirit, and that is the spirit of peace, the spirit of love, the spirit of happiness, the spirit of giving. God bless each and every one of you folks, and thank you for listening to Continue Mission and our special Christmas edition of this show. God bless you folks, and have a blessed evening and Merry Christmas. Good night, everyone.
Merry Christmas, James.
God bless. Merry Christmas.